So I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Brought to you by the MVM Radio Network, home of LouisvillePolitics.com, for all the latest investigations and stories we have going on in Louisville. I threw a couple of people off. You know, we started the show tonight, and I decided I was going to do something different. Today is Veterans Day, first of all. So let me say thank you to every veteran that we have out there in the world, past, present, and future. You know, as a veteran myself, you know, I understand the sacrifices that must be met. Been there, done that. And for those who think that veterans don't deserve a special place in our hearts, they don't know the first damn thing about being an American. But I started the show with Taps, and four or five people that are always in the queue. We always have a bunch of people in the queue to start off the show. Just started deleting themselves, just leaving the queue. I guess they didn't like Veterans Day. And this is a conservative show for the most part. So, you know, for those people who say that they're conservatives and they're offended at playing Taps on Veterans Day, you kind of got to question that. But that ain't why you guys come here. I just wanted to point that out and say happy Veterans Day to all. And how are you, Mr. Martin?
All right. Thank you for your service, Mr. Springsteen.
I appreciate that, sir. I tell you what, I'm nobody special. Just somebody that had to do a job. You would have done a job, too, if you needed for it. So it's no big deal. You know, we have got all kinds of things going as usual. It's not a big surprise for most of us. But we do have a Rand Paul interview, and we will get to that in just a short amount of time. A couple of local stories I found very interesting, Ed, and I think you will too. We've been talking a lot about this local sales tax option. And by the way, thank you, Mr. Paul, over Stop Invisible Taxes. He just put a thing up there that said Happy Veterans Day. But, you know, we're talking a lot about this local option sales tax. And it's interesting because there was something brought up, and I hate to even give this source because I can't stand these sellouts, but WDRB actually did a story. And what was so fascinating about it is nobody, including me, folks, I've got to admit stupidity here, has thought about this so-called 1% local sales option tax that Fisher is trying to push through Frankfort to get on the ballot for Louisville. What nobody has thought about, and I have to give credit here to WDRB, is the independent cities within Metro Louisville. You know, Greg Fisher is trying to say that this is going to raise $138 million a year to fund his big public projects, you know, like Waterfront Park, those kind of things. But what's fascinating, Ed, is you look at places like J-Town. J-Town has their own amphitheater. You know, if you look at a lot of your big malls and stuff, they all are part of those independent city limits. How will they be affected by the sales tax, and what would stop them from enacting their own local sales tax? And Fisher is kind of scared of that, man. What do you think about that? I had never looked at that possibility. Hello?
Yeah, you're
breaking
at places
it.
Like middle. Okay, well, I'm out in the middle of nowhere.
Okay,
can you hear me now?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me now? Yes, I can.
Am I back?
Yeah, you're back.
Yeah, I mean, I hadn't thought of that, but yeah, it's right. You've got, and a lot of these smaller cities, independent cities, they thrive because of how they're set up and stuff. J-Town, you know, does well. Middletown does very well. You know, you start looking at Shively, a lot of retail in these areas. So, yeah, it makes you wonder: is the city going to think they could step in and take a cut of the action of cities that are managed independently of Louisville?
That's the thing, though, because he can't step in and take a piece of their action. The interesting thing is here that I didn't even put together, there are actually about 80 different independent cities within Louisville Metro. Each one of them had their own businesses, as you pointed out, with J-Town, the amphitheater. You got St. Matthew's Corridor there with the malls, whatever. You got all of these independent cities that had their own infrastructure. So when we look at this, what's to prevent those independent cities from going? This is a Pandora's box.
I didn't think of St. Matthew's, but my God, if it's a sales tax, they got two of the biggest malls in the state right next to each other, right in the guts of St. Matthew's, and they take care of. They take care of their own. They've got their own police force, their own fire department. They do all right.
So then it comes down to, he can't force that local sales option tax to come from those places, can he? Because they're independent cities. That's what we agreed to. That's what they agreed to keep merger a possibility, which will let the independent cities maintain their independence. So I don't see how he's going to generate $138 million a year anyway from this local option sales tax. If the independent cities can opt out of it, what's to prevent them for like the St. Matthew's Mall? How many millions of dollars go through the malls and the other stuff that's within the city of St. Matthew's?
Oh, yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it just keeps coming.
Yep. So it's going to be really interesting. Now, of course, and Paul's pointing out the obvious from Stop Invisible Taxes, our good friend Paul Holliger, Fisher and them are already behind the scenes trying to figure out how to buy these people off. You're right. And he's also saying they're going to try to get a split of the booty. He's right about that, too. That's exactly what they're going to try to do. But this is what the taxpayers have to realize, that even if they agree to give Fisher half of whatever, they agree to split the booty on whatever percentage they want to, if this passes, this local option sales tax is a reality, there will be absolutely nothing stopping these independent cities from adding their own 1% sales tax on top of whatever Louisville does, regardless of any split. They can agree to a split, and 2 years later, St. Matthew's can add a 1% sales tax. Oklahoma, whoever these independent cities are, 80 different cities, the city of Shively, they can add their own 1% sales tax. So now we're going to give taxes at twice the rate. And nobody, including this guy, folks, Mr. Research himself, even caught that. That is a very, very disturbing situation. And I'm not sure why it hasn't been caught, but it's time now that we pay attention to what's going on with this, because in January we're back in session, right, Ed?
Well, yeah, and I think it's great that it actually got caught by WDRB and got put up there, because, if you're going to oppose something, you want to look at all aspects of it, and that's going to make it a bit harder sell for, whomever might stand against the local option sales tax, pointing out that, not unlike tolls, once you give them the authority to tax, it's like, okay,
right.
Stop and think. It does have to be voted in. So now that that's out there, and it's way ahead of the game, too, it's something people can consider. It's like, look, we're not just talking Fisher. We're talking everybody.
Right.
You could, Eastwood. I don't even know if we actually have a city hall. But,
well, it is.
You're right. There are all sorts of cities out there that it's like, okay, so you can get a 1%. Like, at some point, are we going to find ourselves voter fatigue? It's like, Louisville's going to push for the 1%, and then a ballot initiative in Oklahoma, sadly, and in Middletown, one voting cycle, and then next voting cycle, it's going to be, Middletown and St. Matthew's and whatever.
Well, that's the interesting thing about it, because
it just keeps going. West Point. My God, if you open the door to this, every little city council that screws up
it's going to be pretty interesting.
They're just going to put it on there, and they're just going to slip it in. It might be a 0.5%, might be 1%. Don't worry about it. Kind of like the Jefferson County School Board. Look what happens there, people.
Well, it's going to be interesting, too, because when you look at this big picture situation, they don't even have a real bill. They just got basically an outline of a bill that they want to talk about. right now. Of course, that's being worked behind the scenes as we speak. And, you know, part of the language that they've talked about already is that it's going to be limited to 1% per county. So if that's the case, you know, once you open up that Pandora's box, if you can add up to 1% sales tax, these individual cities are within the county of Jefferson. That dilutes the power that Greg Fisher wants. So let's say St. Matthews decides they're only going to raise their taxes a half of 1%. Then the city of Louisville can only get a half of 1% throughout the rest of the county outside of these cities. It's just really an intense situation. I'm really looking forward to watching how it plays out. And, of course, we do know people in this state typically don't like taxes. As our good friend Paul points out, you know, the library tax failed 2-1 countywide, you know, and rightfully so. It should have. This tax should fail if they decide to put it on the ballot, but never underestimate the power of the lying machine. That's how we got merger in the first place, that has given the city of Louisville all they wanted and screwed the county every chance they get. It's really kind of strange to me. Moving on to the second story, though, we've got another story here. Mainstream, or at least lamestream, I should say, has finally caught on to what we've been talking about for quite some time now, the race for governor. Who's going to step up as a Republican candidate? You know, we've talked about the likes of Jamie Comer. We've talked about the likes of Hal Heiner. And lo and behold, we've talked about Phil Moffitt as well. Phil has decided not to get into the governor's race, opting instead to run for the 32nd District State House race against Shelley May. Well, Joe Girth finally decided he was going to get on board this thing and put an article out over the weekend talking about how Jamie Comer has to watch Hal Heiner right over his shoulder. They're listening to our shows, Ed. Isn't this what we've been talking about? Is a Comer, Heiner, possibly Moffitt mix-up that Heiner should be a formidable foe? And now the Courier-Journal is talking about this. You know, they're saying that Comer is probably the favorite, but the Hal Heiner is out there as well and has been going around us making the rounds, you know, trying to see if he's got enough support. you know, they're setting the stage for what we've already set the stage for, so I guess they're also rounds. But I thought it was an interesting story because if you look at a Comer-Heiner matchup, it really comes down to money, doesn't it? Heiner can actually self-finance. Jamie Comer can't. Will that make a difference if that ends up being the Republican primary?
No, I think Comer is sort of like Thomas Massie. He doesn't have to. He's well known, you know, and a stroke of brilliance is that, you know, one of the things he does is he goes to all 120 counties, at least the first year of his campaign, you know, and he's still the biggest Republican vote getter in the state. So, I mean, as you well know, when we went to the Lincoln Day dinner, I mean, Comer's always there. So, I don't think there's going to be any trouble financing because he is statewide. He's the star of the party. He's the one that they, you know, speaks at all the Lincoln Day dinners. He's always headlining, whether it's, you know, a dinner honoring Jimmy Higdon or whomever. I think he's just got too many. I think Comer just has he's built it well. He has a whole boatload of favors from and connections from having made the round. So, no, I don't think I like Hal Heiner. I like him as a candidate for mayor. I like him personally. But I just think Comer has such an it's an insurmountable head start. He's just, you know, every head of every GOP in every county is, you know, they like Comer because he shows up and he helps people fundraise, so that means people are going to help him fundraise.
Well, I just find it an interesting dynamic because, you know, all indications are, according to this article by Girth, that Heiner supporters say that Hal is ready to spend $5 million in a primary, which would be actually the most that a Republican has ever raised in a gubernatorial primary. So it's going to be interesting to see if this shapes up the way that we want. But for me, it was funny just seeing the CJ jump on board our bandwagon as usual. You know, so I just thought I'd toot our own horn and toot.
Okay. You know, since we're out there throwing it out, I would question whether, you know, I don't know, Hal's got that kind of, you know, I guess he's got that kind of money, but Hal's also a smart individual, and I just don't see him throwing good money after bad. Now, this could be talk. Now, it wouldn't surprise me for a second if Hal, you know, we talked about other people positioning themselves, then how could he position himself for a lieutenant governorship under Comer?
It's a possibility. You know, I mean, anything's possible.
That's what I'm thinking.
I think that would be a great ticket either way.
I don't think Hal tilts at windmills. You know, he could be saying, if people could put some things out there, it's as they say, unearned media. He doesn't have to pay for advertising. And Girth is writing an article about him because they're throwing some possible, you know, there's a possibility that he's considering exploring the possibility of spending X amount of dollars, and boom. So now he gets some press. So, you know.
Well, I will say this.
At some point, that prompts a phone call from possibly Comer saying, hey, do we really want to do this? Or, hey, let's say I run. You want to, you know, and it starts a dialogue. That's what I'm looking at it. And
well, the biggest issue, though, has been.
I'd love to see Hal Hanna run on a ticket with Jimmy Comer.
Well, I would like to see. I don't really care which one of those will be on the top part of that ticket either, whether it's Hal or it's Jamie. But I would like to see those two team up in the gubernatorial race myself. But it is interesting, though, because Hal in the mayor's race came up just a little bit short, but he put $1.9 million into his campaign out of his own pocket. So Hal does have the ability to self-finance, you know. But again, for me, it's really not the money that makes this such an interesting race. As we've talked about before, it's the dynamics. Can somebody from Louisville win a governorship in Kentucky? Because Louisville is looked at so poorly by the rest of the state. That's going to be the interesting paradox we look at going forward. But I'm looking forward to seeing what really, really develops here, because it's going to be very, very interesting. And I tell you, we've got another story before we go on break.
You know,
and then we'll come back
with
Grandpa.
One last thing about that. Of course, the Courier Journal, which, you know, has an abysmal circulation. It strikes me as odd as if you have a guy who's thinking about it, and that somehow this warrants some big story. And I would think,
right,
you want to get interesting, let's start throwing it out there. Let's start throwing some fuel on the fire for the Democrats. It's like, I see some articles saying, hey, can Jack Conway do it, or will he strike out against, you know, Adam Eaglin? Who's the stronger? You know, let's throw some fuel on that fire, too. It's okay for fun.
It's amazing.
These are two incumbents who are both angling. You know, I don't think Conway can run for AG again, and it's very obvious that Eaglin is positioning himself for something besides auditor. So
I've got to be honest
with
you, Ed.
Now there's a more definite fight for you. And then throw Crit Llewellyn in there while you're at it. But you know, I don't know if it's a standing order. You can't stoke the Democrat fires until it's, you know, until they announce or something. But, you know, hey, you want to stoke a fire, let's go there, because we know there's a showdown coming there.
Well, what makes it so funny is the fact that you mentioned Jack Conway, and I'll tell you why. Because, you know, most people don't know this. Our shows are never scripted, folks. I refuse, and, you know, I own a network, so forgive me if you don't like it. I refuse to have a scripted show. Whenever you go on to other radio and there's different people there, they coordinate in advance of what they're going to do and all of that stuff. I don't want that because I want a show that's real. You mentioned Jack Conway, and that was actually the next story I was going to, because Jack Conway just came back on the radar. And we were going to kind of get into the gubernatorial mix at the end of this. But Kentucky Attorney General Jack Conway.
I know where you're going with that, too.
You betcha I do. He's actually
unscripted as
about,
it is. I'll be honest. You're right. if anybody's listening, it's right. It's unscripted. A lot of times when I punch in, it's like, oh, crap, where's he going?
Well, and that's the beauty of it, because it makes for a real dialogue. But Jack Conway is so scared of what's going on with a court ruling that it might cause him to lose some power as attorney general. He's actually going to argue his first case in front of the state Supreme Court himself this week. And that case basically is something to do with whether his office has the power to investigate drug trafficking and other crimes statewide. What's ultimately happened here, you know, to kind of give a little bit of a background, what's ultimately happened here is Jack Conway's office has basically interceded in an investigation on a drug charges. He was not asked, his office was not asked to investigate or anything else, but he decided he was going to. So he jumped into an investigation that included FBI, state police, all kinds of things. The guy that was in this actually appealed these convictions, and the argument is that the attorney general had no business being in it. What's fascinating, the case is, here, let me get this for you real quick. The case actually has to do with, here we go. Convicted trafficker Floyd Grover Johnson. He's a convicted drug trafficker. That there were criminal investigations into him that included the Attorney General's office, who put himself into that without being asked to. You know, and according to the attorney for Johnson, it said, this lady goes on to say, it is not disputed that the Attorney General can or even should take an active interest in drug offenses across the Commonwealth, but they should only do so when they are invited. Well, Johnson was charged in Powell County in 2009. He was trafficking morphine and oxycodone, and he was arrested on that. Remember that big old arrest they had where they got 300 arrests in 34 counties? Operation Flamingo yep. Road went on for 3 years. It involved the Attorney General's office, the FBI, state police, and the DEA. However, Jennifer Carpenter, a sworn officer in the AG's office, videotaped Johnson making an undercover buy and later testified against him in front of the grand jury. That's how they got that. Well, Johnson went ahead and pled guilty, and he was sentenced to 10 years in prison. But he pled guilty only on the condition that he be allowed to appeal this conviction because the Attorney General's office had no jurisdiction. The videotape is what they had him on. And he thought it was wrong for the Attorney General. And I actually agree with this. And so did the Court of Appeals. In January of 2012,
twice.
Yep, exactly, twice. In January 2012, a three-judge panel of the Court of Appeals unanimously reversed the conviction because the local officials had not asked the Attorney General to investigate. The Attorney General's office is tasked to prosecute in a lot of cases and everything else, but they don't investigate cases unless they are asked to do so. And that's Jack Conway. That's to keep this big brother out of your damn business because they have no business being there. And actually, you know, on a side note, I kind of find it ironic that Jack Conway illegally put himself into an investigative capacity on a drug charge, considering his brother Matt Conway, Dave Stengel, and Jack Conway were involved in one of the biggest drug cover-ups there were ever, tipping off him so his brother Matt stayed out of jail. But so much for that story. But it is really interesting because the Attorney General's office can only prosecute cases when they're asked to do so by a prosecutor. So why should they be allowed to investigate on their own?
And on top of that, a prosecutor is only going to bring you in when maybe he needs added resources. This all sounds pretty much like a slam dunk. It was pleaded and stuff, which would lead you to believe that the Conway just kind of hopped in at the last minute and think, hey, you know, slam dunk. I'm going to get my name on this. I'm a crusader.
Right.
Which is, that's what it sort of reeks of. But, you know, we both know there's a lot of jokes made about Jack and his lack of actually arguing. Lack of actual court time and you know, being a successful litigator. I have to wonder when I read that same article, or maybe a similar article, when he says, oh, this is so important, I'm going to argue it myself. I wonder how many eyes started rolling in his office going, oh, no.
Well, you know, it's like Jerry Abramson, ain't it? It's like Jerry Abramson, isn't it? Neither one of these guys have ever done anything. I mean, I think I've probably got more practical law experience dealing with cases than Jack Conway or Jerry Abramson has in their entire careers. They've both been nothing but bureaucratic pencil pushers. I mean, it's funny. But what really makes this interesting, though, is because, you know, when you get into the General Assembly and the laws and things like that, you know, the drug trafficking chapter of state law says that the AG's office, along with sheriffs and police, should investigate drug crimes. But the court said that the AG's powers are limited to what? Coordinating investigations and investigating them on invitation only. The appeals court, Judge Jeff Taylor, Michael Caperton, and Denise Clayton, sent the case back to Powell Circuit Court for further review because the AG's office was involved without being asked to be. So this is really, really interesting because here we go. The AG's office didn't mind getting involved in covering for his brother, and the cover-up began with the case of Matt Conway. You know, there's something there with the con being as part of their name. You know, so they get involved in all of this crap, work with Dave Stengel and everything else, who, by the way, Dave Stengel resigned from the Commonwealth Attorney's Office, didn't run in the last election, and went to work for Jack Conway. There's the trade-off for him aiding and abetting the cover-up with Jack and Matt. So, you know, Dave Stengel now works for Jack Conway, making six figures. Imagine that one. But, you know, so the AG's office, Jack Conway, illegally puts himself in a situation, and now he thinks it's so important because he's not going to have any power. He's actually going to try his first case. And this very well may be the first case. I don't know of any court case Jack Conway has ever taken to court at all, period. So this may be the very first time he's ever been in a court of law.
Yeah.
Actually,
well,
I know,
you know, we won't name names, but every once in a while it's come up in conversation. And it is a joke. It is a bit of a joke amongst politicos.
Oh, it is.
You know, you say, I argued this case. They're like, oh, you know, somebody makes a joke. Yeah, I've argued more cases than Jack Conway. And I remember one person, and you may remember that person too, prominent, who looked at me and said, huh, you must be like, what, a first-year graduate out of law school if you've argued more cases. I was like, oh, damn it. Wow.
Well, true story. I
didn't
tell
say
you.
It. I didn't say it. Somebody said it. Me.
True story, and I got to tell you this because this is funny to me, but, you know, because of the cases that I've done with Jim King and Judy Greene and things like that, and I wasn't actually allowed to argue those cases. I put the cases together, and they forced me to accept an appointed attorney to actually argue the cases on my behalf, which was really funny because they wasted, you know, $250,000 in taxpayer money. You know, hell, they could have paid me that, or they could have paid me cheaper if they wanted to. I didn't care, but it was interesting because of those court cases. My name was on them, and I won the cases, and I didn't have legal counsel officially. It was interesting because now I get email all the time from people, and it's just funny to me, people in Louisville and beyond who are coming to me wanting me to help them with their legal situation. Everybody thinks I'm an attorney, and I've never went to law school. So I just think it's kind of interesting. We're going to take a break, folks, and we're going to come back, and we're going to go ahead and listen to the Rand Paul interview. I want you guys to check in, so sit tight and enjoy. We'll be right back and listen to the Ed Springsteen Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. Stay tuned.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. ErniesPrintShop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound.
You guys know you love that new beat we're using these days. I tell you what. Welcome back to the Ed Springsteen Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. You know, there's so many things going on, and I tell you, it is beyond belief what gets put out there and what doesn't. Obamacare and so many other things on a national level are completely out of hand. And, you know, anyway, we had Rand Paul on our show multiple times. during his race for senator. And we introduced him, actually. I think we were the first radio show he did in the Louisville market back in the days when we were on KJK and before we went this road. But the Rand Paul, to me, has lived up to expectations. I think he is doing an excellent job. I think he is doing exactly what we voted for him to do. And I am very proud that, even today, I spoke with him earlier this week or late last week. And he remembered those early interviews, and I was really surprised by that. All the interviews he's done, all the people he's seen and talked to. But he remembered those early interviews with us over at KJK. And anyway, long story short, had a great opportunity to speak with Rand Paul again last week. We did an interview, and I got to be honest with you folks. His time is very, very valuable, and they agreed to 9 minutes, and I took 13. apologies to Rand Paul in advance. Senator Paul is a class guy. He's a lot of fun. But anyway, I want you guys to hear the interview in its entirety. That's about 13 minutes long. We're going to go ahead and kick it in right now. Martin, anything?
Oh, no. You were talking about how we were one of the first to interview Rand Paul. I remember his campaign manager who actually scheduled us up for the radio show. They got their wires crossed, and he was gracious enough to give us about 20 minutes from dinner.
it was pretty interesting, but Rand Paul is a character. Senator Rand Paul is a character when you meet him in person. And believe me, folks, what you see is what you get. This isn't a guy who sits out there and has the public persona that he puts on for the TV cameras and the media. This is a guy who's the same guy outside of that. So, it's interesting when you find somebody who is, for lack of a better word, real all the time. And Rand Paul fits that category. So it's a great honor and a privilege to get back with Senator Paul. We'll have him back on again in the near future. We just couldn't work the schedules out to get it live this week. So he volunteered to pre-tape it if that was possible. Of course it's possible. So here you go. Rand Paul in its entirety. It's about 13 minutes long. Enjoy. Okay. Senator, it's good to have you on the show once again. It's been a couple of years since we've talked online, or on air, I should say. There's a lot of people who are very, very impressed with what you're doing in Washington right now here in the Louisville market, but we do have some questions, and recently you've come under fire, so what I'd like to do is just get a couple of the stupid things out of the way. They're stupid to me because I don't think they're a big deal, but this whole Wikipedia situation, can you explain to me how this has become such a national issue?
Now, first you have to see where the origin of it is. It comes from, MSNBC and a bunch of basically partisan hacks and haters. Now, is there any truth to it? Sure, there are instances where we haven't been as good at footnoting things, but I think it's different than people saying, oh, you've been dishonest or you intentionally tried to mislead people. The speech, for example, was a speech I gave to a university, and it's about a 25-minute speech, and in that speech I reference a bunch of things. I give credit to the novel 1984, the movie Gattaca, which is a dystopian future where genetic selection occurs before birth, a play or an autobiography called My Left Foot. I also quote Einstein, Ray Bradbury, and Michelangelo. So it's not like I was trying to steal anybody's ideas. I gave credit to everybody. But in quoting or talking about the movie Gattaca, we use some lines from Wikipedia. And I guess for the oral word, I always thought there was a little bit less of a standard than writing a college paper. If you write a college paper, you put hundreds of footnotes in. But when you're doing the spoken word, sometimes you'll say the movie Gattaca, and you think, well, I've given credit because I'm not claiming I wrote the movie Gattaca, but I did use information about this from another source. But you, in a spoken word, you don't often get into that level of detail, and none of it was intentional. But really, once it goes through the left-wing internet mill, they make it out to be basically it becomes part of a big attack engine.
Well, that's nothing new. And, that was what made it so fascinating to me, because here in Louisville, the CJ Rag, as we refer to it here, the Curious Journal, these guys decided to make a story out of it. And quite honestly, Wikipedia is one of the most oft-used references for a lot of people, and very, very few people ever credit Wikipedia for finding a quote. So with your history, I thought that was a stupid thing to try, but I wanted to get your opinion on it, give you a chance to respond to it for the Louisville market because they like that kind of stuff. Moving forward on some other issues, we have some reports out this morning. CBS News is one that's reporting it about what the campaign ads, and that's what I call them, when you do an ad trying to bring tourism business into places like New Jersey and Chris Christie, and you're putting a politician in a running campaign on the air getting all this free publicity for millions of dollars of federal dollars, I find that an insult to the American people. Apparently you do too. Is there some backlash involved here? I mean, you went on record this morning talking about how this gives the whole thing a black eye as far as the use of federal dollars. Can you expand on that?
You know, I think that it is insulting to the taxpayer, and it also ought to be against the law. You know, in New York, it is against the law. So, for example, New York did take some of the Sandy funding, but in New York, it was against the law for anybody to put their face on TV and promote themselves with regard to the storm damage. And so, yeah, I think it should be against the law, and I think it is something that shows judgment in choosing whether or not you would do this. You know, we've also had this in Kentucky. We have billboards all over Kentucky with politicians putting their face on the billboard saying they're against, illegal drug use. Well, it's one thing to say you want to change policy and put a billboard up. Even that, I wonder if it actually does change any policy. But it's another thing to say, oh, I'm for this certain policy, and here's my big mug I'm going to put on a billboard or on TV. Really, I think taxpayers ought to be outraged by that, and I would hope there'd be a groundswell to make it illegal in states for taxpayer money to be used to promote a politician. It's probably why politicians have about, a 10% approval rating.
It has a great deal to do with it. Another thing, too, I kind of want to get into some of the serious issues, the Obamacare and things like that. You know, we were claiming that we had this so-called shutdown. I always say it's a so-called shutdown because 85% of government was still operating. Welfare benefits were still getting paid. Social Security was still getting paid. Military was getting paid. But the Republicans were being under this radar. Mainstream media went on an immediate attack and started discounting Republicans to the point. And really, truly, for most of us, and correct me if I'm wrong, the biggest problem that created the shutdown was the fact that the Democrats in the Senate and President Obama himself did not want to delay the individual mandate in the Affordable Care Act. Is that a correct assumption?
Yeah, and it's kind of ironic because they kept the government shut down because they wouldn't accept funding with the delay of the mandate. Now, because it's so awful, you actually had two dozen Democrats go to the White House saying, gosh, we've got to delay the individual mandate. All these people are getting canceled. Like in our state, in Kentucky, 10 times more people have been canceled from their insurance than have actually signed up for Obamacare. So the Democrats are going crazy beside themselves because they're worried that the voters were really going to punish them for having so many of their insurance policies canceled. So, yeah, it is ironic. Democrats refused to open the government up, kept it shut, because they wouldn't accept a delay, but now all of them are for the delay.
That's kind of where I'm heading with this, because in Kentucky alone, the last number I had was somewhere around 150,000 cancellations from insurers. And the reason I find that ironic is for almost 17 days, the Republicans were told they're going to lose races. The midterms, they were going to get crushed, killed, because how dare they shut down the government over Obamacare, which was a passed law. Now, here's the contention from a lot of people, including my side, and this is what I hope you can explain to us, because Obamacare was passed by the House, passed by the Senate, signed off by the President, so we have a bill that becomes law. That's the process. It was challenged at the Supreme Court, who agreed that it was constitutional, even though they labeled it a tax. So at that point, this law has to be adhered to in all the tenets of what it's supposed to be about, or none. So the problem, and this is where a lot of people are questioning why the Republican Party, or how come they're not selling their message so well, is this. In order for the President to exempt anybody, small businesses or anything else, since this was a law, the President can't pick and choose which parts of the law he wants to adhere to. So this was something that should have been brought back before Congress to allow these exemptions and repassed or changed or modified at that point. Is that correct?
Well, you're absolutely right. And all of the modifications or amendments that the President's mm-hmm. been adding to this are unconstitutional because the President's not allowed to write laws. He's allowed to approve or disapprove of laws, and he can veto them, but he can't write laws. So everything he's done is illegal. And here's another thing that a lot of people don't realize. The original Obamacare law did say if you have your doctor, you can keep them. When they wrote the regulations 3 months after Obamacare passed, President Obama and his unelected bureaucrats changed the law to say that you can keep your doctor as long as your insurance policy doesn't change in any way after a certain date. So the interesting thing is the provision that's causing everybody to get their insurance policy canceled, it was written after the fact. It was written after the fact by President Obama. We challenged it, and there was a vote. Every Republican voted to overturn the rule and tell them you can't throw people off their insurance policies. Every Democrat voted and said, we're going to keep you, you know, you will be canceled and that you will lose your insurance policy if it doesn't pass muster according to what we want
problem,
you to have.
The problem, though, is for me and for a lot of us conservatives, especially Republicans here in Kentucky, is we feel like the Republicans aren't doing a good job selling their side of the equation. So when we talk about the illegal acts that Obama has done with this Affordable Care Act, you know, with the exemptions and stuff, how come those have not been sent or challenged at the Supreme Court level so that we could get this ruling? Instead of basically going for defunding Obamacare, how come we haven't challenged the constitutionality of it at the Supreme Court level?
Well, you know, we have tried, and some of it, you know, as you mentioned earlier, didn't succeed. So the original justification was the President Obama argued that the Interstate Commerce Clause gave him this power. We actually won that argument, and then Justice Roberts created a new one and said, oh, it's not really a penalty, it's a tax, which is really devious and opens up Pandora's box for anything to be done as long as you call it a tax. We are questioning the constitutionality of whether he can amend the bill after the fact. It takes a while to go through court, and I'm not a lawyer, but the lawyers I've asked about this say that arguing that he can't do this, it's difficult to get standing where the court will see you as a party that's been somehow damaged. You just can't say, oh, he damaged my constitutional rights on this, and therefore we challenge because he's not obeying the Constitution. The courts just don't see it that way, and they don't let you challenge things. So it will be difficult, but there are going to be court cases. I promise you, we're not giving up on this. And then the court cases take a while. You know, they take a year or two to come to fruition. But in the meantime, my prediction is they will not have this problem figured out by the election in 2014. So voters are going to get one more chance to say, are you happy with Obamacare? Are you happy with the Democrats gave you on Obamacare? Are you happy that you got your insurance canceled? And are you happy that when you finally got through the stupid website, it cost you three times as much as you were paying? My guess is there's going to be a lot of unhappy people
out there. I totally
agree
with you. Real quick question, because I know we're out of time constraint here. Have you got time for one or two more quick questions or no?
I think one more because I think I've got another interview.
I appreciate that. I just want to switch this one in here, too, real quickly. There's a whole host of places to go. The TSA, as we now know, there was a shooting that involved three agents of the TSA. One was killed, two were wounded. You know, should TSA agents be armed? That's going to be an ongoing question for a while. Having been victimized yourself by an aggressive TSA agent, should TSA agents be armed, or is that something we just need to stay away from?
Well, the first thing I'd like to say is that what happened is not appropriate, inappropriate, absolutely. You can be angry at the system, angry at laws, but somebody going and shooting TSA agents is absolutely wrong, and I don't want anybody to think that my criticism of policy would ever condone something like that. It's absolutely wrong. And the other thing I would tell you about the TSA is I meet the agents every day as I go through. They're frustrated by the policy, too. Many of them are ex-military guys that have retired from the military, and they're working. They're good people, a lot of them. It's not their fault, but it is your government's fault. It's the policy, and what you need to do is be angry with your politicians. Not in a violent way, hopefully, but angry with your politicians for giving you bad policy and giving too much of this overly, this over-surveillance state where everything has to be looked at. And I think we should target what we're doing more towards people who are intent on attacking us and not just every average ordinary citizens. I would hope that we get to a point where there's very few, if any, of these pat-down searches unless there's probable cause that you are committing a crime. I would also hope that we could get more people into the frequent traveler line where you're away from some of this, because I think when we treat everyone equally, from the six-month-old baby to the 90-year-old grandmother, equally as potential terrorists, we're not spending enough time with the people who we actually should be spending time with, which are mostly visitors to the country or people who have newly arrived from about 10 or 20 countries. That's who seems to be attacking us. And so I think if we narrow our focus a little bit and then use probable cause and follow-up leads, you know, when Russia tipped us off to those Boston Marathon bombers were intent on, you know, going back to Chechnya and may have been radicalized, we should have paid attention better, and we We should have done better police work.
We totally agree. And most common sense Americans would agree with you as well, sir. We appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me on, Ed. We'll do it again.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Right, and we are back. Yes, we are back live here at the Ed Springsteen Show right here on MVM Radio Network. I tell you, it was an interesting interview. I, you know, many thanks to Senator Paul. You know, he has always been available to media, and you know, especially to us. I mean, we can get Senator Paul. You know, we can get all kinds of people if we want them. But the interesting thing to me, you know, we was talking about, you know, the Obamacare package and the unconstitutional thing. You know, that's an argument we've had on air, and I couldn't get anybody to answer that question. Why has it not been tried at the Supreme Court? Because the, you know, unconstitutional way that Barack Obama is changing the Affordable Care Act that was enacted into law. So he didn't dodge it. He agreed with it. But I find it interesting. When we talk about standing, Ed, couldn't we realistically find one person out of the thousands who have had their insurance canceled thanks to the tenets of Obamacare? Couldn't any one of those people have legal standing to challenge the Obamacare mandates and get to the Supreme Court on the unconstitutional basis?
Well, I mean, yeah, you would think somebody out there, you know, who has been adversely affected by the changes. Now, if, you know, an individual that's had their rates go up because they got canceled, yeah, if you could get back to the root of it and find out where, you know, exactly who and what alteration in the law, who wrote what exactly into the law after the fact that caused their policy to be not up to snuff, not passing muster, you would think, I mean, granted, you know, we've been told before, it takes a solid $250,000 to get before the Supreme Court, and like Rand Paul said, it also takes takes a year and a half. Now, I understand there are some small businesses out there, some, you know, organizations that are challenging certain aspects of the law, whether it's the whether they have to fund control or whether things like that. So, I mean, the challenges are out there. It's just they're moving through the cut. They're moving through the court system to where it's going to take a while before they gain a little profile. They've got to work through the state systems and things like that. So,
yeah, but for me, though, it's a paradox, Ed.
I think in a couple of years we're probably going to see quite a few of them.
Well, I'm sure we will, but small business, for example, they're basically exempt. The individual mandate is the only thing that's left in the Affordable Care Act, and that's where the entire problem is at. So, you know, as far as the small businesses lawsuits and things like that, or the unions and all that crap, you know, they've already been delayed for 1 year, so there's no rush to get this fixed. But with the midterms next year, with all of a sudden, you know, everybody in the world is seeing how bad Obamacare is. I mean, it's gotten so bad that mainstream media actually backed off. The Republicans are evil, corporate, greedy bastards, and started pointing to the whole world that Obamacare is bad and the website's faulty. So, you know, even they had to change mid-stride. So the thing for me is, you know, with that in mind, the individual mandate is the only tenet of Obamacare that's left. That's the one that's being forced on people. Now is the time for that lawsuit. I'm not really interested in the small business lawsuit at this time, and I apologize because I know you're a small business. But, you know, the individual mandate is the one that's actually going on right now. To me, this would be the one that the Supreme Court would look at faster than any of them. And yet we don't have anybody stepping up. Why is that? I understand the $250,000 play here,
well,
but let's face facts.
Again, we don't know that people aren't standing up. It's got to work its way through the court system. You know, it doesn't go. You don't get directly to the U.S. Supreme Court. You've got to go through appeals and district courts, and it takes a while. You know, when they're in session, when they're not in session, it's look how long Jack Conway's little case has taken to work its way up through the system. He's the AG who knows everybody. So I think it's coming.
Well, he might have had to go through a legal profession.
Depending on the uneven application of the law, you're probably going to see a lot more. And I think it's going to get bogged down for a long time. You know, whether the unions get special treatment or small business gets special treatment or whatever. I think just simple, as we've said all along, just, you know, and I've been saying for quite some time,
could this be a situation where the ACLU got involved?
You pass the law, you sign the law, the Supreme Court signed off, implement it. Period. No more delays. You know, that's up to Congress. And I think just that simple premise. And there are people who want to take it down just because it's Obama, which I don't agree with. But there are people who want to challenge it. They want to make sure everything's on the up and up. And I think.
But see,
I
at
think
this point, though, Ed,
a lot of those come down the pike.
But at this point, there's a couple of things. One, it's not about taking it down just because it's Obama, because the Democrats who voted for Barack Obama, who believed in Obamacare and the Affordable Care Act and everything else, are the ones that are having their rates raised, and they're screaming the loudest that they were lied to. It's no longer Republicans that are playing this card. It's the Democrats and the Obama supporters who are screaming the loudest. I haven't heard from Sandra Fluke. I guess she's out there doing something. What the hell? I haven't heard from Sandra Fluke, and I'm going to be real nice about the way I say that. But the majority of the Democrats who are now getting shafted by this individual mandate are the ones screaming the loudest. It's not in the system yet, and what I'm curious about is because, you know, we have the ACLU. We have constitutional people out there that have the resources and the money and everything else to pursue this. There hasn't been a case filed that I have found, over the last week or so. I haven't looked this weekend, admittedly. I stopped looking on Friday. But there hasn't been a case filed to date challenging the individual mandate. And I'm kind of curious why. If it's unconstitutional, and it clearly is, we know the Congress isn't going to do anything about it. You know, we know that's not going to happen. How in the world can we, the people, be stuck in a legal conundrum like that? Because it makes no sense. Everybody in this country who has to sign up for Obamacare today has legal standing, and it's unconstitutional, as Rand Paul himself agreed to. So, you know, that's my thing.
Well,
and
it's the arbitrary after-the-fact changes that are unconstitutional. But I think we're going to, you know, it just needs... The shock has got to wear off, and then I think we'll see some cases. But it's the law as it stood is a tax, and it was passed, and the Supreme Court upheld it. But then after the fact, they start going in, and that's, you know, a totally different thing. When you go in and says, okay, you know, celebration time, it passed. The Supreme Court says it passes constitutional muster. Yeah, we had to call it a tax. Everything's good. And then they basically close the doors and go in and says, okay, now let's start modifying it. That's where the challenges, if they're successful, are going to have to be.
Well, here's one for you. We've got the Attorney General, Jack Conway himself, going to challenge his own case or present his own case to the Kentucky Supreme Court. Okay? If he doesn't come through with that with flying colors, he's going to take our tax money and appeal it to the Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court. It's going to go that far if he doesn't get his way. All right. So because what's he fighting for? He is fighting for the right to investigate on his own. All right. That's it. It's not a money situation. You have to have standing. Does he have standing? Let's define standing. So it's not a money situation. So I'm trying to understand, if Jack Conway is arguing for the right to investigate on his own without having a case before him or being invited into an investigation, if by some freak accident of nature he wins that at the Kentucky State Supreme Court and ends up at the U.S. Supreme Court because it gets appealed once again and he wins that one, then what is preventing the Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court, from doing their own investigation right now of Obamacare and the lies and the changes in the individual mandate? He can't have it both ways, right?
He can argue all he wants. The fact that the reality is if he gets shut down by two appeals courts and the Kentucky State Supreme Court, he may submit it to the Supreme Court to try to get a hearing. They're not going to. They're just going to look at it and go, no. It's like... No,
you're right.
You're a three-time loser. You're just a poor loser. Go away.
Well, you're probably right, but it is interesting. And as our good friend Paul is pointing out in the chat room, an individual citizen can't get the Kentucky Attorney General to look into anything. And he's absolutely right. During the Jim King case, I had to play three different hoops and do an end around just to force a special prosecutor because the AG's office was ignoring that case and illegally ignoring that case, in my opinion. And so I had to play some legal games and do some legal maneuvering just to force him to get a special prosecutor on it. Of course, it was a special prosecutor that's bought and paid for it in Hart McGibbon, so I knew what the outcome was going to be. You know. And then, interestingly enough, you know, his right-hand man today, former Commonwealth Attorney Dave Stengel, refused to allow me to present evidence to the grand jury when I, as an individual citizen, do have that constitutional right to address the grand jury and bring charges. And I wasn't allowed that. I was denied my constitution. If I would have had the money, I would have took that to court. You know, and that's the problem with things that I do, because people want you to do everything we do, Ed, but they don't want to help you pay for it, and it gets expensive. But, you know, so there's all kinds of ways around this. I'm curious to see how this is going to work out. And I'm hoping that somewhere in the very near future, somebody steps up to the plate and challenges the constitutionality of Obamacare based on the individual mandate changes after the law was enacted. But one thing always stays the same, Ed. It's one of the fastest hours on radio, my friend. Final thoughts.
Yeah. Well, final thoughts. You know, I liked what Rand Paul said about the Wikipedia. His explanation was good. You know, commentary on the mainstream media. And the right wing does it as well. And my grandmother used to say years and years ago, stop majoring in minors. You know, it's like, okay, so you know, he give credit to all different sources, you know, movies, books, whatever, during a speech, and he doesn't verbally footnote something that, you know, a few words he took out of Wikipedia. You know what, mainstream media, does it really matter? Is anybody going to die? Is anybody, you know, are soldiers going to be put in harm's way? Is it going to cost anybody more money for insurance? You know, are they going to have to allocate? Is anybody going to go hungry? Is anything bad going to happen from this? And if not, then okay. Then let's just look at it. Let's make a few jokes about it and move the hell on. You know, really.
Well, and you're absolutely
damn
right.
Media.
Well, you're absolutely right on that. And you know, I tell you, I'm going to go completely off track here on you folks. First and foremost, you know, happy Veterans Day to our fellow veterans, my fellow veterans, and those who have served our country proudly throughout our history. You know, even though it's been hard sometimes to do so with the leadership we have today, you know, you're still fulfilling an obligation that you made to our country and our Constitution, and it's a debt that can never be repaid. And on a side note, at least 10,000 people are reportedly killed in the Philippines over the weekend from one of the most powerful typhoon storms we've ever seen. It's Super Typhoon Halyun destroyed about 70 to 80% of all of the things that were in its path through the central Philippines. I do know that before we set the bases in the Philippines, we had a lot of our American people over there. And I also know that some retired and stayed in the Philippines. So my personal wishes that they're safe, and prayers for everybody that was killed in that. That's one of the most traumatic storms I think I've ever seen in replays in mainstream news. So they do some good. They actually let you know what it's raining outside. With that in mind, that's it for tonight, folks. Tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, right here, same time, same channel with the Ed Springsteen Show. And I guess we'll see you then. Have a great night, all. Thank you so much for listening. Take care, sir. Thank you.
You too.